We're going to talk more about series versus sequences, and then these are some other things we do as series. A series is just a special kind of sequence. So, whenever you see this, this by definition is a limit of a sequence, namely the sequence of partial sums. So for any n, you add up the first n terms. That's your sequence. Now, what's interesting though is not only is an infinite series a limit of partial series, finite partial series, you can turn it around. I can turn any sequence and its limit into an infinite series. Here's what I'll do. So let's say I have some other sequence. Here's how I can turn it into a series. What you do is for each term, think of how you go from one term to the next. So you start with the first term, then if you want to go to the second term, you would have to add the change, the difference between the second term and the first term. This would equal y2, right, with cancellation. If I wanted to go to the third term, I would add the change between the second term and the third term. So now all this would be y3 after you cancel everything. And you could go all the way to term I. You just have to add up all of the changes from the first term to the ith term. Okay? So what you have here now is actually, it's looking like a series, right? Like this thing here is, it's a list of things added together, and the list always starts the same way. The only thing that differs, depending on what n you pick here, is how far you go along here before you stop. But it always starts with x1, then x2, then x3. Likewise here, you're always starting with y1, then this, then that. The only question is, when do you quit? Okay. So actually, maybe better if I use n's here. Try and make my notation as harmonious as possible. Yeah, so you see the correspondence there. Okay, so I'm going to write this now as the limit, and I'm just going to package this thing up into sigma notation. I guess this was the sequence doing? It's starting at 2, I guess, going to n. If you like, you could write it equivalently. You do kind of a little indice hopping, so to speak. You could think of it as starting with index I equals 1, going up to n minus 1, but then you would have to write it like this. More than one way to do it, but just different. These are just three different ways of writing the same thing. The fundamental idea is breaking up the nth term in the sequence into starting term plus successive changes between terms, all added together. Now, by the limit law, you can break this, you can break either of these up into the limit of the constant sequence that's just y1 over and over and over again, plus the limit of this part, assuming the two limits exist. So if these limits exist, then this whole thing. Obviously, this limit exists, right? It's just the constant sequence. So the lim sup and the lim imp are both going to be y1, right? And it's just y1 over and over and over again. Okay. So, for example, now think of that homework problem from day 4. Remember that sequence? We can turn that into a series. Moreover, we can turn it into a geometric series. So we can say exactly what the limit is. So, for example, we have this recursive formula. Let me show you how to make it geometric. So, if you look at the first difference, y2 minus y1, what do you get? You get 20 over 3 minus, or plus 5. That's the second term of the sequence, minus the first term. So, okay, do some arithmetic here. 20 thirds, 15 thirds, 60 thirds.
Who's that?
Oh. That. On the other hand, think about what the next term would be. I can understand it as a constant multiple of the previous one, because I can write it as plus. So the plus 5s will cancel when you do the subtraction, so you're just left with 1/3 of what you had before. Okay? And now in general, so I claim there's a pattern here now, right? I mean, this will be that 1/3 of that would be negative 25/9. So I see a pattern here. I can think this is negative 25 over powers of 3. So I can prove that this is true by induction. If I have this difference equal to negative 25 over 3 to the n, which is certainly true in the first case, right? y1 plus 1, y2 minus y1 is equal to negative 25 over 3 to the 1. Then you do this exact same argument I did here. yn plus 2 minus yn plus 1. The next difference would be by this exact same computation. 1/3 of the previous difference, right? Because to go from to go to the next terms, you always divide by 3 and add 5. The addition of 5 gets canceled when you look at differences. And so all that's left is that division by 3. So you're left with negative 25 over 3 to the n over 3. Okay, so simplify it, negative 25 over 3 to the n plus 1. Just as these n's match, these n plus 1's match. Okay. So by induction, this is true for all n. Base case here, and then this is the inductive case. Questions or comments about this? The point is, every time we're dividing by 3 and doing a shift by 5, so the difference is, the difference between consecutive terms cancels out the shift by 5. And all that's left is that division by 3. So every time the difference is only 1/3 as big as the previous difference. Now, using this kind of thing here, we have that the limit from the limit of the sequence will be the same as just the first term plus that this sum here. So for us, that's 20. Then all these differences are of the form negative 25 over 3 to the I with that index variable. Now, in the limit of adding up a greater and greater number of these terms, what are we talking about? We're talking about a series. It's just this. Now, what you can do with this is you can use the limit laws, right? You could break this up as a negative 1, or actually, you'd break it up as a negative 25. Constant sequence times this thing, but with the negative 25 pulled out. Writing myself into a corner here. But after you pull that out, what you're left with is 1/3 to the power I. So this is just negative 25, and this is just the sum from n equals 1 to infinity, right? The infinite series here. Let me write I. No need to change. Of all the, so this is all the positive integer powers of 1/3. Now we know a formula for geometric series, right? If A is smaller than 1, then the series converges to that. Okay, so we've got 1/3, which is definitely smaller in magnitude than 1. Okay, so... so we're going to have 20 minus 25 times 1/3 to the power 1 over 1 minus 1/3. And that should come out to 7.5, right? Because we have graphical and numerical reasons for suspecting that's the limit. This is an alternative way to see the same thing. 20 minus 5 times 1/3. 1 minus 1/3 is 2/3. Okay, so back, cancel the thirds, so you have 25 halves. So 40 halves minus 25 halves is 15 halves, 7.5. So sometimes, you think it's a sequence, but sometimes it's possible to understand it better in terms of a series by thinking of it as, instead of, you change from one term to the next, think of it as adding up all the changes that are required to go from the start all the way to your current position.
Questions or comments about this setup?
So that's the correspondence. On the one hand, an infinite series is a limit of finite partial sums. On the other hand, any sequence and its limit can be reinterpreted as a limit of partial sums, and hence equal to some infinite series. Other correspondences now. Let's say I have some numbers, and they're all non-negative. Okay. Then, if you form partial sums out of non-negative numbers, the more numbers you add, the bigger the sum gets. The sum will never get smaller. Let's say I go from n plus 1, add up the first n plus 1 of these numbers. Right? That's the same as adding up the first n of them. That's the same as adding up the first n of them and then adding one more. But if all the individual terms are non-negative, then this is greater than or equal to the result of just adding nothing to the first n terms. So if you have a sequence of non-negative numbers, then the sequence of partial sums is increasing. Okay. Every time you add another number, the partial sum gets bigger. Okay. Now, if a sequence is increasing, then if the sequence is bounded above, then it converges. Okay. any sequence that is also bounded above, any increasing sequence that's bounded above. If it's not increasing, if it's, say, oscillating up and down, then even if it's bounded, it might never converge. But if it's just increasing and there's some bound, right, then it's going to stabilize somewhere, namely at its supremum, right, which will be the same as its limit superior, which will be the same as its limit inferior, which will be the same as its limit. It'll actually all exist the same. So if the partial sums all have a common upper bound, I need the word above in there, then the limit, right, which we write this way, exists, or you could say converges. Right? This is just a fancy way of saying that the limit of the partial sum exists. Okay. So, an example of just sequence. Photograph. Here's an example. This is a sequence of positive terms, so I can prove it converges just by proving that all the partial sums are bounded, because the sequence of partial sums is increasing. So it suffices, it's good enough to find some upper bound B. Natural number n, I need the sum of the first n reciprocals of squares. Okay. I claim we can actually do that. So we're taking reciprocals of squares, we're doing some algebra, so we're going to need to do some kind of algebraic analysis to get a handle on this. Okay. So what's my algebra trick here? Well, what I'm going to do is I'm going to actually turn these reciprocals of squares into differences of reciprocals, right? So, for example, if you take a reciprocal and you subtract the next reciprocal, what happens? Well, put it in terms of common denominators. This is I plus 1 over I times I plus 1. This is I over I times I plus 1. Now what I'll do is I will round down the I plus 1 to I. So I'm going to shrink the denominator. But if I shrink the denominator and leave the numerator alone, that'll make the fraction bigger. I don't want to do that. I want to make the fraction smaller. Because I want to get an overestimate of my reciprocals of squares. So I'll do it that way. Okay? Okay, so let me I guess I need to re-index it a little bit. So instead of I and I plus 1, let's use I minus 1. This will be fine as long as I is at least 2. Okay. If I made I 1, then I'd have 1 minus 1 and I'd get division by 0. Okay. But just shift everything down by 1. I'll do the form you want. Okay? Okay. Now let's look at this. So we have 1 over 1 squared plus 1 over 2 squared plus 1 over 3 squared plus all the way to 1 over n squared. Now, make my little, use my little overestimate there and turn it into 1 over 1 squared. I can't do anything with that because this only works starting at 2. So this will be 1 over 1 minus 1 over 2. That's what happens if you plug in 2 here. 1 over 2 minus 1 minus 1 over 2. Then the next term will be 1 over 2 minus 1 over 3. And so on. All the way to 1 over n minus 1 minus 1 over n. Okay? Now there's tons of cancellation here, right? Negative a half, the next term in here, right? Why don't I write the next term? It would be this, right? See, there's a ton of cancellation, right? The halves, the thirds, then the fourths, all the way until this one even will get canceled. The only stuff that doesn't get canceled is this term, and the last term. Okay. So when you have this kind of cancellation, it's often called a telescoping sum. Right? Kind of like these old-fashioned kind of little telescopes that just kind of nested and collapsed together. But anyways, maybe I should call it a collapsing sum or something. But there's a ton of cancellation. Okay. And so, let's see, minus 1 over n, well, let's just round it up to 2, right? This is 2, and then we're subtracting something positive, right? Because n is a positive integer, so less than 2. Okay? So, b equals 2 works. Okay? So, I've proven that this converges, and I know it converges to something at most 2. Right? Well, that's the end of my proof. So now, sort of reflecting back on what we've done, think of it like this. So if we're adding up all the reciprocals of squares, this equals something, and it's at most 2, right? I proved that for any finite sum, it's strictly less than 2. It's possible now that in the limit of adding them all together, it comes out to exactly 2. Or it could come out to be something strictly less than 2. I don't know what. I do know that it's going to be at least as big as, say, this, right? I can get lower bounds just by adding up some finite number of these, right? It's only going to get bigger and bigger. So if I add up, say, the first 100 reciprocal squares, that would be a lower bound, and then 2 would be my upper bound. But if I want to get a better upper bound than 2, if it's even possible, I'd have to do some more precise analysis. It's actually pretty hard to figure out exactly what it converges to. But believe it or not, it converges to pi squared over 6. Yeah. That takes some doing to prove. The kind of stuff we do in this course is just, demonstrate that it, does converge at all, right? But you may recall last time that something not too different, right? The sum of all the reciprocals, that does not converge. Now this is the sequence of this partial of these partial sums is also increasing. Okay. Because all the individual terms are positive. Okay? So this was an increasing sequence, but it didn't converge, right? We proved it wasn't Cauchy. Right? We proved that if you looked at, two powers of 2 plugged in for n, that the difference between those two partial sums would be at least a half, right? So if you wait long enough, it's always going to grow by a half. So it'll keep growing by a half forever. It's not bounded, right? If it was increasing and bounded above, then it would converge. But it doesn't converge, so it's not bounded above. Now, so if you're in this kind of situation, the usual convention is the supremum doesn't exist as a real number, say, but we just have a convention for describing this situation. The supremum of all the partial sums is, we just describe it as infinity. Since the thing is not bounded above. And that makes sense, right? I said if you wait long enough, the partial sum will increase by a half. So keep adding a half forever, and it'll grow without bound. Similar game to this, like this one, to prove other powers converge. Like you could prove that the reciprocals of the cubes converge. Okay, you could prove that the reciprocals of the fourth powers, when you add them up, converge. We do have a complicated formula for the sum of the reciprocals of the fourth power. That's pi to the fourth divided by something. But we don't have any formula for the sum of the reciprocals of the cubes, like 1 over 1 plus 1 over 8 plus 1 over 27. Nobody's got some formula for it in terms of pi or whatever. We just have a name for it, since we don't have any other symbols that work out to it. We call it zeta of 3. Yeah. So sometimes, you know, there's just no way to understand it in terms of basic things like pi and e. You can only understand it as, well, it converges and we can give numerical approximations to it. Questions, comments about this? This kind of analysis, this is how you handle some kind of a series of positive terms. To prove it converges, you have to have some kind of overestimate that is simple enough for you to understand, like this one. To prove it doesn't converge, you would need some kind of underestimate, like when we did some kind of underestimate for this thing last time, right, where we added up a you know, all the reciprocals from 2 to the s, 1 over 2 to the s through 1 over 2 to the s plus 1, all those we found were at least a half, right? So to understand series of positive terms, you either need an overestimate or an underestimate, depending on whether you're trying to prove convergence or divergence. Now, if your series is got some positive terms and some negative terms, if it oscillates, then things get a little trickier. The usual thing is to have some kind of... The first thing to try is just look at the absolute values. Okay, that's called absolute convergence. Times, you know, the series would converge even if you didn't have negative and positive cancellation happening. So a lot of times you can just make a crude, you know, sort of overestimate in terms of how bad things are by just pretending everything is the same sign and there's no cancellation happening. Absolutely convergent. Now, the basic thing to get at here is that if your series is absolutely convergent, then if you take away the absolute value signs, the original series will converge too. Okay? And simple proof if you do it in terms of Cauchy sequences. And you believe the so-called triangle inequality. Okay? here's it goes. So convergence of a sequence is equivalent to the sequence being Cauchy. So we're going to use that concept. So if this converges, that means the limit of partial sums, right, exists. That means that the sequence of partial sums is Cauchy. But if that's, so let's see. What does it mean to be Cauchy? Well, that just means that you look at, you know, for any epsilon, if you wait long enough and you look at any two terms, that are at least k, difference between them is less than epsilon. Well, now here's where the triangle comes in. I'm not sure which of M and N is smaller, so let's let A be the smaller one. And let's let B be the larger one. What if you look at the actual difference? Right? You know, the difference in actual terms of the sequence between these two partial sums. Take the first m terms, subtract off the first n terms. Okay, so you get some subtraction. Okay. So the difference will just be the sum that goes from A plus 1 to B, right? That'll be the, so the first, if N is the smaller one, then the first N things cancel, then you have to go from M plus 1 up to N. If N is the smaller one, then the first N things get canceled, and you have to go from N plus 1 up to M. And whether it's positive or negative, I handle both cases with the absolute value sign there. Now, triangle inequality, right? The absolute value of a sum is at most the sum of the absolute values. And then what is this? Well, this is going to be exactly this difference here. Right? Because you're going to have the same kind of cancellation here. The only difference is now you have different absolute value terms canceled. Notice that this, all these numbers are non-negative, so this is always going to, when I add them up, this is always non-negative, so there's no need to put absolute value bars around this whole thing, because it's already non-negative. So, and then this is less than epsilon. So given any epsilon, if you wait long enough, and the difference between partial sums of the absolute value stabilizes, then the difference between partial sums of the actual terms also becomes epsilon stable. partial sums for the original x's are form a Cauchy sequence. But if this sequence is Cauchy, then it converges. If the sequence of partial sums converges, then what the traditional way of expressing that concept is just to say that this series going off to infinity, so to speak. So if it's absolutely convergent, then it's convergent. The application right here of the triangle inequality is just saying that, you know, when you add these up, you know, what could happen is if some are positive and some are negative, there could be some cancellation. But in the worst case, where there's no cancellation at all, the size of the sum is the sum of the individual sizes, right? If they're all positive or all negative, you get exactly that. Right? But if there's even some cancellation, this will only get smaller than this. Calculus 2, there are series that are convergent but not absolutely convergent. So the converse to this is false. Does anybody remember an example of that? So if you're absolutely convergent, then you're convergent. But could you have a series that converges but doesn't converge absolutely? What the triangle inequality is saying is, you know, the cancellation can only help you converge. But does it really help that much? Could a series actually converge, but only because of some cancellation? Okay. And, well, you think back to Calculus 2, I guess, is conditionally convergent series. This is a name for that whole class of series. How about this one? This is the alternating harmonic series. Remember what we did with differences of reciprocals? And how we were able to round that down to reciprocal of the square? Well, now I'm going to round it up to a reciprocal of the square. shrink this denominator to make the fraction bigger. I guess I should say for all I. Right? Okay. So I claim that this, because of that estimate, I claim that this this kind of series is actually a Cauchy, hence convergent. But it's not going to be absolutely convergent, right? If I put the absolute value bars around each term, I get this. People just say it's divergent, right? We talked about that. But I claim that with this kind of thing, I can get control. And I claim I can get enough control to make it Cauchy. So let's consider the difference of, imagine like we're over there looking at the difference between two partial sums, so we have this kind of thing. Modulo a plus or minus term in the front, it's going to be, because I'm not sure which power of negative 1 I'm starting at, it's going to be 1 over a plus 1 minus 1 over a plus 2 plus 1 over a plus 3 minus so on all the way until you get to, I'm not sure whether it'll be a plus or minus, because I'm not sure how many terms there are here. Okay. Now let's just put some absolute value bars on this thing. Trying to figure out, how much of a difference could there be between two different partial sums? Well, I'm going to use that estimate there, and it'll be something like 1 over a plus 1 squared, 1 over a plus 3 squared, and so you'd be skipping two terms. Maybe all the way to just being a safe set, and it would be like, it might be b minus 1 squared. If I have to, or this could be, the last term could be 1 over b squared. Depends on whether it's even or odd, when you take the difference with a. You have this kind of thing. So what you're going to have is either a bunch of odd numbers squared, in the case where a is even, or a bunch of even numbers squared, in the case where a is odd, right? Using this little trick here. Let's look at, say, the case where A is odd, for example. If you think about this series, where you add up all the even numbers squared, right, which is the kind of thing you have here. This is going to converge, right? Because for all n, if you look at the partial sum, right, that's going to be less than or equal to the sum where you added up all the first 2n squared reciprocals. Right? Here you're adding up all the even squares from 1 squared to the square of 2n. We'll just add up all the squares, and we know that we had a bound for this, right? So I'm using the fact that why don't we just write it like this? We have this bound. Okay. And given epsilon positive, if you get this A large enough, right, then this term here, right? We know that this sequence converges because it's increasing and bounded above. So if you wait long enough, then this thing, if you look at any partial sum, it's sufficiently far out there. The difference between it and the limit, right, will be less than infinity. Okay. So that means if you have one of these kind of things here, if you're A, and let's say you have K as above, then for any A that's at least K, this series here, where you're taking the difference between two partial sums, anything like that, by our little estimate here, it's less than, right, this sum starting at A. Okay, but I need to say two things about it. Okay, it's on the one hand, it's less. You're adding up a bunch of things here. So how can I describe it? It's less than the sum where you just go from here all the way to infinity. Okay. Right, where you add up all the even squares starting at A plus 1. Right. Right. Imagine instead of stopping there, just adding them all up. Well, then it only gets bigger. Okay? so I guess I'm going to need A bigger than 2K, actually. Now, this difference here is exactly the difference, is exactly what happens if you start late. Imagine taking everything, all of the reciprocals of even squares, and then you subtract just the ones here. Okay. If you subtract some early ones, all the stuff that comes before A plus 1 here, just subtract all the earlier ones, then you take the late ones and go all the way out to infinity, that difference between adding up all of them and just adding up the early ones is adding up the late ones. Okay. But this difference will be less than epsilon, provided the A is big enough so that, you know, this thing here plays the role of N. You just need this to be at least k. And if I make a bigger than 2k, then I'm good, I think.
2k plus 1 or 2.
Like that. Yeah. I don't want to be on the safe side. I'll put another plus 1 in there. Okay? So this whole thing will be less than epsilon. Because this series of even squares converges. Okay, so what I do is, to prove that this thing is Cauchy, I look at one of these kind of partial series here. Then I did an overestimate in terms of a partial series of in this case, either even squares or odd squares reciprocals. And then that series, right, is convergent. So it's actually, right, this series will be Cauchy, right? So that's why we get control here, right? That the difference between these will be small. Where A is even is similar. So basically, to prove the sequence is Cauchy, I overestimate it by another Cauchy sequence. Okay, so let's write down what I said. Sequence of partial sums. So this thing converges. We don't have any clue what it converges to, but we've analyzed it enough to show that it does converge. The idea here is control it with this kind of stuff. And this also gives us, of course, our example of not absolutely convergent, but convergent, you have the help of cancellation, right? Questions or comments about that example?
I have a question.
Yeah.
why or where did it come from when you changed it to where I was equal to A plus 1 over 2? Like, what's the difference? Like, what is
Well, okay, here it's like, if A is odd, then these are a bunch of even numbers, right?
Yeah.
So, if I wanted to start at A plus 1, and I'm plugging in 2i, then this is what I need I to be to make it start with A plus 1.
Okay.
Yeah. I just have the 2i there to represent even numbers, yeah. Tell you about briefly. I'll say two other things and say your homework. Okay. So, these are two tests that help you figure out whether or not a series is absolutely convergent. And since you know about upper limits now, I can tell you a stronger form of these things. Ratios of successive terms, and they're smaller than 1, at least when you take the upper limit, then your series is absolutely convergent. Things get a little tricky in terms of proving divergence with the ratio test. But you can actually prove the original series diverges if you have lots of ratios of successive terms bigger than 1. What's going on here with this, in the nice case, in the convergent case, basically you prove the sequence is Cauchy by using control of the ratios to overestimate it by a geometric series. Just like at the beginning when we had the sequence of y's and we turned it into a geometric series with powers of a third. If you have this upper limit here as less than 1, then you can use that to estimate your series as a geometric series. And then the similar things for the root test is a little bit nicer. The root test kind of takes an average of a bunch of ratios, so to speak. And the interesting thing about the root test is that, see, here I said if the lower limit, and hence also the upper limit, is bigger than 1, then the series diverges. Here, if the upper limit is bigger than 1, then even if the lower limit is small, having this upper limit be bigger than 1 basically forces these ratios to be bigger than 1 kind of on average, and hence often enough that the original series diverges. Okay, so to prove the divergence, you basically underestimate by a geometric series where instead of the base smaller than 1, the base is bigger than 1. And so so the terms are getting bigger and bigger, and it's blowing up, going to infinity. And the last part, prove that the alternating series of reciprocals of Q's converges. And prove that the series of reciprocals of square roots diverges. Now, I should caution you that we haven't really done much with the ratio and the root test. For this particular homework here, the ratio and root test will not help you. If you try it out, you'll get upper and lower limits of 1, which doesn't tell you anything here. Right? Over here, you need it to be less than or greater than 1. So don't use the ratio or root test there. Use some of the earlier methods we did in class. Okay. We will do some more stuff involving like ratio and root tests and absolute convergence next.